Hello and welcome to the 54 Problems podcast. I'm your co-host, Andrew Edmonds. Welcome one and all, and thank you so much for joining us. And with me, as always, it's my good friend and co-host. You are never going to believe it. It's Simon Brown. Hello, Simon.
Hello. And as always, it is fantastic to be here with you.
Look, it's a very exciting time for us because we're starting a new series of episodes looking into the history of mini golf. So making sure there's at least an oral record of historic mini golf moments, first tournaments, historical rounds, everything like that. We're going to get people involved with them and make sure it goes on record. So it's an exciting time. Simon, how are you feeling?
Yeah, I mean, when we first spoke about doing this podcast and we spoke about episode ideas, in my head, I had three perfect episodes that I'd love to do. And this is one of them. And the timing of this episode could not be any better, which I guess is why we've got around to doing it now.
That is a fantastic tease. Let me tell you something, that is a fantastic tease. Well done. Look, when we started doing this podcast, there was no other forms of media doing global tournament summaries and tournament recaps. We have that now. The podcast does fantastic recaps of tournaments from around the world. So if you want to listen to that, please subscribe to the podcast. They do an absolutely fantastic job. What we're going to do is look back at some of the history of mini golf, and we're going to keep doing those special episodes that we're known of when we invite fantastic people from various fields, psychology, from business of mini golf, and we talk to them as well. So exciting things planned for the future. And in terms for our history of mini golf episodes, as Simon said, this is a fantastic way to start. So let's bring our guest out. Today we are talking to the founder of the BMGA, the British Mini Golf Association. Please welcome to the 54 Problems podcast, Peter Parr. Hello, Peter.
Hi, Andrew. Hi, Simon. Great to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. As Simon said, we've wanted to talk to you for such a long time. It's a pleasure to talk to you. How are you doing today?
Yeah, really well. Yeah.
We're recording this in the run-up of a historic moment in mini golf, the anniversary of the first ever BMGA tournament. As we said, you were the founder of the BMGA. How we'd like to start is, can you take us back to before the BMGA was formed by yourself and just talk a little bit about what your relationship with mini golf was like and sort of the starting of the idea in your head that led you to found the BMGA?
Yeah, with pleasure. So, I've always enjoyed playing mini golf. When I was a kid, I lived in North London, used to go to Southend-on-Sea for day trips a couple of times a year. And the highlight of the trip was always a round or two on the old Arnold Palmer crazy golf course on the Southend seafront. So moving forward a few years, I am half Polish, and mm-hmm. My teens, I used to go every summer, spend my holidays out in Poland with my cousins. Mm-hmm. And 1994 it was, I was 18, just finished school, and we went to the main park in Warsaw, Łazienki Park, and lo and behold, they'd opened a mini golf course, 18-hole mini golf, very kind of makeshift course. But mini golf is mini golf, and there was nothing like that in Warsaw before then that any mm-hmm. of us were aware of. So not only did we play around that day, but we basically inaugurated the Warsaw Invitational Tournament. And for 4 years, for four summers, my cousins and I contested that prestigious trophy, played over four rounds, and I think I won it the last 2 years it was held. Really, really enjoyed that. Great fun. And then it was Christmas 1997 when I got on the internet for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And what was one of the first things that I searched for? I don't think Google existed in those days.
Sure.
Alta Vista or something like that that they had at the time. But one of the first things I searched for was mini golf tournaments or mini golf championships, because I had this strange idea or vague idea that in the US, the sport was played competitively or semi-competitively.
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't know anything about it, but just kind of had that vague idea that it was big in the States. And wow, I mean, what did I discover? I found out not only that there was already a World Mini Golf Sport Federation, but in fact, Great Britain and coincidentally Poland were one of only a handful or two of only a handful of countries in Europe that did not already have their own mini golf sport associations. Mm. For example, Germany, the association had 13,000 registered players.
Wow.
Which was kind of, yeah, I was amazed to discover how big it was in some countries, and that there were world championships even that I'd never even dreamt of. Since we were the only country or one of only a few countries in Europe without their own association, me being me, I decided to found one. So I reached out to the WMF, the World Mini Golf Sport Federation, and just basically registered my interest. And I asked, I see that there's world championships. What are the qualification criteria? What do we need to do to qualify to play? And I got a letter back from the chairman of the WMF at the time. And they said that there's no criteria at the moment for qualification. You can turn up to the next World Championships, which were in Papendal in the National Sports Centre of the Netherlands, which is near Arnhem.
Yeah.
And you can take part. So roll forward. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself a bit, but you can also. The British Mini Golf Association can apply to join the WMF. So roll forward a few months. I can't remember, you may know the date, but sometime in the summer, July or August 98, we held our first ever tournament in the UK, the British Open Mini Golf Tournament, which is still going strong to this day.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
We had 14 players take part in that tournament. Players from Poland, England, Ireland, Belgium, Spain, and quite to my surprise, three professional players from Austria rang me up about 10 days before the tournament, saying that that they'd love to take part. And one of them was a former European Championship bronze medalist. Well, I tried my best to dissuade them. I said, this is only a very rough and ready competition over two rounds, and that the course won't even be closed to the public while the tournament is on. I wanted to save them, you know, a journey and wait maybe 12 months until we were a bit more organised. But no, they came over. The tournament went ahead. The three Austrian players, so this was Christian Freilach, Thomas Zeininger, who sadly died earlier this year, but a former coach of the British national mini golf team, and Heinz Weber, who's went on to do some great things, like the European Championships in 2002, I think it was, in Timișoara, Romania. So they were the three players, and it really seemed that watching them in the practice session, that all they really needed to do in order to win the competition was turn up on the day. I mean, they were just so far ahead of the rest of us in terms of standards. I think I'd only bought my first mini golf ball and my mini golf putter like a month before the competition, with a starter set of three balls. And I don't think any of the other players in the field even had any mini golf equipment. So the three Austrians were a class apart. But the competition took place at Broomfield Park in Palmer's Green, North London.
Yeah.
I don't know if the course is still there. The Austrian players were playing in a guest house in Finchley, it was, so quite a long bus ride away from where the course was. And come the morning, their bus didn't turn up, and the next bus didn't turn up either. And by the time they got to the course, the competition had already begun. We'd already played a couple of holes. So cue a hasty discussion between me and the other committee member at the time, Scott Coe. And we decided that in fairness to the three players, because they were all drawn in different groups, that at the end of the round, they would be able to play the holes that they had missed, sort of catch up the holes that they would missed. But for those two holes. But by the end of the competition, even with that penalty of beginning basically with 14 shots on the scorecard, they still finished first, second and third. So that just kind of underlines the gap in quality between the three of them and the rest of us. And it was Thomas who won that inaugural British Open.
Yeah, okay. And I think it was a great decision by you to let them catch up on the rounds. Absolutely. A few things that I find interesting there. You took us back nearly 29 years ago and mentioned the Arnold Palmer course at Southend-on-Sea. We've heard from a few of our guests, actually, that the first time, as with yourself, that they really fell in love with mini golf was on that course, which is quite interesting. So a really formative, influential course there, that one at the Arnold Palmer at Southend-on-Sea.
And it is a fantastic course still there to this day. I believe there's about 10 Arnold Palmer courses left in the UK, and that one still thrives and is still in good condition.
Been a long time since I played the course, glad to hear it's still there. There's two Arnold Palmer courses next to one another, or there were back when I was playing them.
Yeah, I think it's sadly down to one now from what I can see, but at least there is still one there. Mm-hmm. Going to that British Open, you are correct that usually we would do a research and we'd know the dates and the months of things, but going back to 1998, it's so far, even our usual ways of looking at things and digging into the internet, we couldn't find much. So you've told me more than I could possibly know about it. The only thing I can say is the one stat I do have on it is that you were tied for third place and you did actually make the podium. Is that how you remember it? Did you lose in a playoff? Because you said the Austrians had the podium.
I don't think there was a playoff for third place. I don't know whether I tied for third or if I was, I remember finishing fourth. But there was definitely no playoff for third. It was only for first place. But I was the top British player, so I was the unofficial British champion in that first year.
Yeah, and I think it went for several years of the Open before a UK player actually came out on top.
Yeah, I can't remember when the first one was.
It was definitely Mark Chapman. I want to say 2003. I can't quite remember, but I do remember it being Mark Chapman was the first British person to win it.
Yeah, it may have been 2003, because I can probably name the winners up to 2002.
Yeah, if it was 2003, you played in that and finished 12th, I believe.
Wow.
So, there we go. So after the British Open, what other tournaments did you have in that first season? The only one I could find was the British Championships.
In 1998, in that first year, it was just the British Open on UK soil. And then the other tournament I took part in is I trekked on my own over to the Netherlands and became the first British player to take part in a world or indeed a European championships. The 1999 World Championships. So that really was an experience, kind of just playing for the first time on those very different types of course that they have. Here we're used to kind of felt putting surfaces, but in that year it was Eternit. Well, it's always Eternit, and it was Betong, a concrete course, lightning fast surface. You really need the right mini golf equipment, the right balls, and not just have the right equipment, but know what the properties are, know which ball to select at each hole. So it was a huge learning experience, really was. I spent the 5 practice days just watching and learning, watching in awe at the the skills of the players from Germany and Sweden and Austria, including Heinz. Really amazing experience.
As well as a technical learning experience, I imagine it must have been quite eye-opening to see what the global community of mini golf players was like. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it was like nothing that I'd even imagined. Opening ceremonies with everyone having their national flag and team kit, and everyone had like numbers on them for the commentator to kind of recognize who the players were. It took part at the National Sports Centre in the Netherlands. So it was a bit out in the sticks. There wasn't much of an audience in terms of members of the public at that one because of the location. But just to think that it was recognised and endorsed by the National Sports Centre. I mean, imagine if Sport England or a body like that was kind of endorsing mini golf and having mini golf championships staged at the National Sports Centre.
Yeah, okay. So you mentioned in your lead up to the founding of the BMGA, you sort of started this inaugural Polish invitation tournament. At that point, I guess you were playing on a mini golf course, but using a golf ball and a course putter. Is that right? Something like that?
So the Warsaw Invitational, it was kind of like a felt course, but non-standard, just basically put together by the course owner, cheap and cheerful. And yes, just used course balls and a standard course putter.
So I wonder, when you're thinking about founding the BMGA and having what went on to become a British league, but at least you founded having a British contingent join the WMF, were you thinking about the differences in courses? Because Great Britain has a very, at the time at least, had a very distinctive course style with the Arnold Palmer courses, more sort of what we'd call now adventure golf versus the traditional European mini golf. Were you thinking about the kind of course differences and how that might be interesting?
I really didn't know what to expect. Obviously, I'd seen photographs of the courses and I knew that they were standard courses. So a bet on course in the Netherlands would be same as a bet on course in Switzerland or wherever. How it would actually translate to playing those courses, I had no idea. I mean, there's one hole of the Beton course, the Hammer Cage, I think it's called.
Yes.
And it involves kind of driving almost the mini golf ball in the air onto this very large target green. And I just couldn't even visualize that. So I really didn't know what to expect.
Yeah, okay, well. At the end of the day, the Austrians still won the first British Open, despite the differences in the kind of style of course.
Well, just I mean, they've been playing week in, week out in their domestic leagues, and since I don't know what age they started, but since they were very young, and practice makes perfect.
So can you talk about once the BMGA was founded, then, as you said, you spoke to the chair of the WMF, you founded the BMGA, it was now a member of the WMF.
Yeah,
how did you...
We met in 1999 at the AGM, alongside, I think, Taiwan and Singapore.
Wow, okay. How did you then start to build the British mini golf community? What did that look like? Because as you say, it was a time when the internet, very, very different from what it is now, no Facebook where you can start a group and get publicity that way. So how did you start selling people on this idea of forming a mini golf community, eventually starting a league? What did that initial process look like? Was it quite daunting, or did you find you were quite well received?
It was really a challenge, kind of just publicizing it. I think we launched a website, but as you say, fewer people were online back then than these days, so getting the message out there was difficult. I tried various things, press releases and that sort of thing. Got a little bit of interest here and there, kind of novelty angles. I think we had Sky Sports send the camera for the first ever British Masters in 2000, for example.
I think I've seen that clip. Yes, it's quite good.
And they got the name wrong of the winner. They called him Robert Mallory instead of Robert Valerie. But yeah, the publicity was a challenge. It took a while to build up, and I guess with each tournament you hold in different locations, you get the local players interested, and then maybe those local players start travelling to the tournaments at other courses, etc. And we built up kind of a small number of people that began to play a few tournaments a year, and we set up a ranking system, and that created a little bit of competition. You know, everybody wanted to be the British number one.
Yeah.
And then I think it was in 1999, we were approached by a chap called Andy Miller. I don't know if you've come across Andy, but he was writing a book called Tilting at Windmills.
Yes, yeah.
Held of the book, yes.
And that, quite a few people discovered the BMGA through that book. And then 2 or 3 years later, there was another one. Ian Stafford joined the British team in the European Championships in Prague and wrote a chapter of his book, In Search of the Tiger, Tiger Woods, that is, not Tiger Pragnell.
sure. And, Tiger Pragnell would love it if the book was about him.
and so again, all that was really good publicity, and drew a few more people to the sport in its early years.
Did you have a vision? So going back to those first couple of years, did you have a vision for where you wanted it to go, or was it just a case of organising some tournaments because you enjoyed it?
I hope that it would grow. I hope that. That the tournaments would become established, and that the kind of the measure of success would be that I wasn't doing very well in those tournaments, that you know, there were a lot of players that were doing better than me, and so it eventually came to pass.
I think that's a fantastic way of looking at it. Yeah, that's a fantastic goal, absolutely.
Yeah, you did hold your own for the first few years though. You won the English Open in 2001, although I believe it was only a six-man field.
Yeah, was that down in Dawlish?
That I'm not sure you would know.
I think that might have been on a kind of mini version of a Swedish felt course.
Oh.
There was one hole on that course, as I remember. It was fiendishly difficult. So the Swedish felt course has a hole called the Gentleman. I don't know how it gets that name, but it's, you kind of putt the ball up a slope and then it has to fall back into a kind of crescent, and then that counts as hold. So if you hit it too hard, then it just spins round the back of the fairway, rolls back down the hill to where you start. So you're playing your second shot from the tee and then your third shot from the tee, basically either goes in the hole or you're playing from the tee. But on the scaled down version of the course, instead of having that big metal crescent that is the target, you have this very small wooden V, probably no bigger than the palm of a hand, which is your target up the top of this slope. And in practice, I think it took me 17 attempts to actually get the ball in the hole on that hole. But come the tournament, magically, I got a hole in one. So that basically set me up for victory.
Well, this explains that I was going to say, it looks like you had a winning margin of 20 shots. So I was going to ask how that came about, but you may just have explained it.
I do wonder if that's still a record in a BMGA competition.
I mean, Michael Smith would have done his best in a few places, but yeah, that'd be tough to beat.
Particularly over two rounds.
Yeah, most certainly would have been. Yeah, indeed, yes. Yeah, you went 34-40. Yep. And you won £100, which might not be a huge amount of money, but back then wouldn't have been bad. And now we even have events in the tour that don't give £100 to win.
Yeah, that's kind of maybe something that I would have expected to have taken off a bit more, you know, that the British Open would have £1,000 prize money these days or that sort of thing.
Yeah, certainly a lot of the big events abroad do seem to be characterised by having these big top prizes that we don't have in the UK.
Mm.
But we do spread the winnings throughout the field a bit more, I think.
Yeah, and that's a good thing because it keeps the interest up, because certainly in the early days, maybe a bit less now, you could basically say that the winner was going to come from these three or four people. So to offer prizes for kind of top players in category B, category C, or lower down the field, it keeps up the interest and encourages more people to take part.
So, yeah, you mentioned that you thought maybe the prize money would be bigger, and it's not per se that we'd speak about, but do you keep an eye on mini golf as it is now? Do you still follow it with an interest?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a member of the Facebook groups, and I'll check in on the results of the big competitions just to find out how it's going.
Are you ever tempted by a comeback, or tempted to come along and see how it is?
No, well, comeback, I don't think so. I play once a year now. A friend of mine comes down for a day trip from London, and we play one round on each of the three Hastings seafront courses, and let's just say I'm very rusty.
Do you feel, though, a great sense of pride when you see how the BMGA has evolved, a record number of players participating in global tournaments and global leagues? Do you feel that kind of pride that you were the catalyst, you were the innovator that sort of sparked it and set it all off?
I don't know that I really kind of think about it in that way, but I'm just glad that it's giving enjoyment to a lot of people. That's the main thing. It kind of brings a smile to my face when I read someone posting on Facebook about how much fun they've had at a tournament. And then I can think back and said, oh yeah, I mean, I kind of played a small part in that way back when.
Well, I'm not sure about a small part. I think a lot of people have cause to be very grateful for you. One more sort of fun question from me. Do you have any good stories of when you were introduced to what we think of now as classic people on the tour, people that have been playing for a long time, but you were just introduced to them for the first time, you know, tour characters when you think back?
Well, there's very few of the players from my time as a player who are still active on the tour today. I think big top Ted McIver, he's certainly a character, and he's basically been a presence all the way through from 2000, I think he made his debut, and I think he's still competing now. And Ted always used to turn up at the tournaments in some weird and wonderful costume. And really good player, always up there at the top of the leaderboard in those early days.
Yeah, okay, final question from me. you say you watch the Facebook groups and you check in with progress and things like that. As the founder of the BMGA, do you have any advice or any direction on how you would like to see it evolve in the future? Are there things that you're wanting to see that you're not seeing at the moment?
I don't really have any thoughts on that. I know that the association is in really capable hands. Mm-hmm. I know how much work and effort it takes to oversee an association and just to make the tournaments happen. And so I think that the committee members are doing a really great job, and it's a lot more professionally run than it was in those early years. Obviously, you know, kind of with experience, you learn from past experiences and you make changes. And I think the current committee are doing a great job.
Cool. Simon, anything more from you?
I wouldn't normally be so gushing in my praise, but I feel like I have to.
Absolutely.
Because we have this chance to say there is, you know, 50 plus of us that are all over the UK, feels like every month playing in an event, and we have some of the highlights. You know, that's the time we get off our jobs to go and let loose and enjoy ourselves. I've just played my 50th stroke play event, and that's 50 weekends of my life that without the BMGA, I might not have had that pleasure with, and I might not have seen these places and met people like Andrew to do this podcast, and went out to Sweden to play for GB. And, you know, I think anybody listening to this interview that has played on the BMGA tour at any point has an experience or a weekend away or something in the life that has been enriched by what happened 25 years ago on the 8th of August. And looking at that now, that should give you an immense amount of pride to know that even though you're not playing, you know, there's dozens of us every month doing something we'd never have got to do without this.
Yeah, well, it's lovely that people are enjoying it. And I'm really grateful that it's a source of joy for people. And it's really great. Long may it continue. Maybe you can invite me back when it's the 50th anniversary, if I'm still around.
Well, look, Peter, we would love to have you back. And Simon, thank you for saying that. I couldn't agree more. Absolutely. I think a lot of people owe so many fantastic times to you, Peter. So on behalf of the mini golf community, thank you so much for bringing us on this journey, for starting this journey with us.
You're very welcome. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, then. With that wonderful interview, all that's left to say then is it's goodbye from Simon.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Peter.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.